You probably know this, but every system, every organization, every contract or piece of paper, it has some questions that you're not really supposed to ask. And it's not because the questions are illegal or unethical, but it's because if you ask them, it blows the whole system open and you see the flaws. Many of you work in areas where you are trained to generate pieces of paper and contracts or read through them and look for the loopholes and close those up, make them airtight so that there are no questions someone could ask on a technicality that would mess everything up. Let me give you an example of that from this past week in the Kincaid House. It was Tuesday or Wednesday night, and you know what this past week has been like. It's late at night, and I see the glow of the TV from the living room, and I smell fresh popcorn. And I walk in, and I look at my kids gathered there on the couch, and I said, it's really late to be watching a movie. And then I looked at like the progress bar on the movie, and it's toward the beginning, like they're just settling in to watch a movie after a hard day of watching movies. I said, you know, it's really late to be watching a movie. We don't normally start movies at this time of night. And my three junior attorneys asked this question to me, Dad, is it technically a school night if there's no school tomorrow? Okay, well, I had to admit, no, not really. It's not. I didn't love. So we made a compromise. We watched part of the movie. You've had those experiences where someone's asked the question and you're going like, well, okay, technically that's there. I wish you wouldn't ask it because that's not really where I was headed with this argument. So in Romans chapter 5, Paul has been doing some really deep theology. Sin and grace and law and justification and the work of Jesus on the cross. And toward the end of chapter 5, Paul has sort of a drop the mic line where he says these words, where sin increased, grace increased all the more. Now, people might have different responses to that. You might think people would be full of gratitude or want to pursue more deep theological thought when they hear that. Because Paul's basically saying you can't out-sin God's grace. It's a wonderful sentiment. But Paul knows his readers, he knows us, and he knows that people are going to hear that and basically turn into a bunch of adolescents. And they're going to hear that and ask this question. Does that mean I can do whatever I want? Now, that's not how Paul phrases it. Paul is more elegant, but he anticipates the question at the beginning of Romans chapter 6. What shall we say then? Shall we go on sinning so that grace may increase? It's not a straw man he's setting up. That is an expected question to Paul saying you can't out-sin God's grace. If grace is really all that abundant, why not just lean into it and keep sinning? Hold that question and go back with me over a millennium before. As we witness God's people buried under the weight of cruel Egyptian slavery. They're working 7 days a week, brick quotas upon brick quotas to make, beatings, just enough food to survive, full of hopelessness. They probably thought it will always be like this. But then one night, God begins a rescue mission. And he gets them out of their encampments in Egypt and ahead of Pharaoh and his army in swift pursuit. And he takes them across, actually through a body of water that rose up and parted on each side of them. And as they climbed up the banks after that journey and they looked back across and they saw Pharaoh's army, the soldiers and the chariots and the horses. They saw that army swallowed up by the sea that quickly retook its place. And I guarantee you, in that moment, there were some Israelites on the far banks who looked back toward Egypt and said these words, "We are never going back there." Which is why it's shocking that 3 days later, they begin complaining to Moses about food and water. It's not years later, it's days. And about a month later, it's a full-blown crisis where they say to Moses in Exodus chapter 16, "If only we had died by the Lord's hand in Egypt. There we sat around pots of meat and ate all the food we wanted." That's some selective memory, isn't it? Look how fast they wanted to go back. Back to the seven-day work week, back to the brick quotas, back to the beatings, back to the hopelessness. And we look at that and we wonder, how could you think that? Why would you possibly want that? Well, Paul is going to take that imagery and answer the question we left hanging earlier. Does grace mean I can do whatever I want? Back to Romans chapter 6, Paul answers that question strongly. Verse 2, "By no means. We are those who have died to sin. How can we live in it any longer? Or don't you know that all of us who were baptized into Christ Jesus were baptized into his death?" "By no means" sounds kind of formal to us, but that's a strong rebuke from Paul. And for him, it's that strong because it's absurd. It's absurd that our old selves would want to return. Our old selves are as dead as those Egyptian soldiers under the water. So it's not just why would you want to go back? It's how can you go back? Not just desire, it's just possibility. How's that even possible to return to your old self? He keeps going in verse 4. "We were therefore buried with him through baptism into death, in order that, just as Christ was raised from the dead through the glory of the Father, we too may live a new life. For if we have been united with him in a death like his, we will certainly also be united with him in a resurrection like his." When Paul wants to ground holy living, he doesn't just say, "Remember when you believed." He says, "Remember when you were baptized. That's when the change happened." And then he layers the language: buried with Christ, raised with Christ, united with Christ. It's not just some moral symbolism. It is participation in the pillar moments of the life of Jesus Christ. And here, baptism echoes the Exodus story without naming it explicitly. Slavery behind, freedom ahead, and water in between. And Paul finishes his argument saying, "We know that our old self was crucified with him so that the body ruled by sin might be done away with, that we should no longer be slaves to sin, because anyone who has died has been set free from sin." So now Paul's logic comes full circle. The old self was crucified, and the body ruled by sin was rendered powerless. It's not absent or erased. We all know that. We feel it. But it's been dethroned. Sin no longer has the final word. So holiness, then, is not about earning grace. It is about living into the freedom that God has already given us. Grace leads us into Christ, not into more sin. And once you've passed through the water, You are no longer the person you once were. See, if baptism is just this thing that happened back then, it will never affect how you live right now. Paul is saying that baptism is not just the moment you started believing. It is the moment your old life lost all of its authority. So it means the question is no longer, why would I want to go back? The question is, how could I live as if that old self gets to decide who I am? That was Moses' biggest challenge after the Exodus. Getting them out of Egypt, that was dramatic. One moment. Getting them to live like free people took time, and it was hard, slow work. They'd crossed the water, but their instincts had not caught up with them. And Paul is saying the same thing to all of us. You have died, you have crossed, you belong to a different reality now. Holiness, then, it's not just like gritting our teeth and managing temptation better. It is learning to live in alignment with what's already happened, with what God has already done in our lives. So when that Red Sea closed, it didn't just kill the Egyptian army. It separated the Israelites from their former life. They couldn't go back. Now, it seems like frequently they wanted to. And we get that, don't we? Those old behaviors, that old self, it doesn't always seem that bad. It's kind of fun. It helped us manage some things in our lives. And those old behaviors, those old habits, don't always seem like the worst thing in the world. They don't always seem like the dead body we'd want nothing to do with. And sometimes we miss that old life. But if we're honest, and if we don't engage in selective memory, just like God's people did in those first days out of Egypt, if we're honest, we know that that old life was on a collision course with destruction. We know that our life before Christ was death. Paul's point stands. You are not the same person anymore. There's water behind you. Why would you live as if the water never closed up? Now, I know in this baptism series, we've been doing some deep scriptural and theological work, and sometimes it seems kind of lofty, and we're not sure what to do with that. So I want to take us quite practical for the next part of our time together. I want you to hear from some of our brothers and sisters who in the past year have made the decision to be baptized. For some of us who haven't yet, you'll see those who are at a different place in their journey, and you'll maybe see yourself in what they say. For those of us who have been baptized, this is a good reminder of what it was like when we were first making that decision to begin this long journey with Jesus. So as you hear these voices and watch their testimony on the screen and hear them answer some theological questions, hear them talk very practically about what their experience was like, I don't want you to imagine that you're hearing perfect people. I want you to imagine you're hearing people who are just passed on the other side, watch the water close behind them, and who are now learning to live as free people. So watch this video for the next few minutes.
My name is Kelly Reed. I was baptized on March 4th of 2025.
Hi, I'm Savannah Sanderson. I got baptized on February 18th, 2025.
My name is Rachel Webb, and I'm 10 years old.
My name is Mary Rowe, and I'm 12 years old.
My name is Rick Rowe.
My name is Allison Rowe.
I got baptized on August 31st, 2025.
It was on Sunday morning of Mother's Day.
I just always felt connected to God, but we never really went to church growing up. My sister was dating a gentleman, and we would go to his church in Fort Worth, and it was a revival weekend, and so they blew up a pool, and we, if you wanted to be baptized, you just lined up and went and got baptized. So me and my twin sister got baptized. As the years went on, I just realized it was more of a follow along with everyone else instead of a personal decision. I just felt a strong sense that I needed to do it again. You know, I just prayed about it, and after having that conversation with Farland, I prayed about it more, and just really decided that that was something I wanted to do. So I chose Tuesday morning Lady Bible study because I feel just a really good connection with them, and doing it on Sunday morning in front of everyone, I just didn't really want to do it that way.
I chose to get baptized when I realized the importance and significance of it. I also just kind of waited until I felt mature enough in my faith to really commit my life to Christ.
When the girls wanted to be baptized and they came to us, my first questions were to make sure that this was a real thought.
I asked them first if it was okay if I was going to get baptized, and they were like, yes, of course.
I asked them too, and they talked about it's not their decision,
like it's my decision. Marianne was our first to be baptized, and she was probably 11 years old when she started talking about it.
We discussed it a little bit, but I kind of let it go. I wanted to see if she would come back. She was really thinking about this, or maybe this is just something her friends had recently done, and Marianne consistently came back again and again, was saying, hey, remember I wanted to get baptized?
And so at that point, I thought the next best step was to go to someone in the church to see what they would do in that situation.
We reached out to Maddie, Kate, and to Hannah, and they set up an ice cream meeting after school with Marianne, and answered all her questions.
Some people who helped me were Maddie, Kate, because she was there for me the whole time.
And like my youth ministers, like Hannah and James, they helped me.
Rachel was very sincere, and she pushed for it as hard as Marianne did.
My baptism means a lot to me because I was able to publicly declare my faith while washing away my old self and being made new.
It was kind of scary, but I knew nobody would be judging me.
The most important thing for baptism for myself is just first the washing away, but I think just the constant reminder of God's grace.
The church has been extremely helpful in both our daughter's spiritual formation and the furtherance of our own spiritual formation.
I chose Preston Road because it's a place that holds a lot of meaning to my family.
I don't really like getting in front of people, so it was a little nerve-wracking, but it was nice to be around people who know you and celebrating you as well.
This church could not be more welcoming and comfortable towards kids. The Ballards, three-year-old class, the Brenthams, being there teaching the fourth and fifth graders. And even this Samantha was at ACU camp with Rachel. We won't even mention Mr. Blaine's Candy Ministry.
When the girls wanted to do this, it was speed line, and I was very impressed with everybody's help, and I do think that this is just a wonderful experience for everyone. If you've been thinking about getting baptized, I recommend talking to your elder or talking to your minister that you feel most comfortable with and go ahead and ask the questions that you need to ask so that you can move forward with that. Just don't wait on it.
There is no reason to wait. If you have questions, reach out to either Ms. Samantha or Hannah or James.
I'll say the greatest gift that I ever received is the gift of a new life that Jesus gave me on the cross. And so there's nothing that will ever mean more to me than that.
I thought it was a great decision.
I think if anybody wants to be baptized, they should. I think that's the best decision they're going to make.
Thanks to all of those who were willing to share their story with us. Some of us who've been baptized needed to hear that and be reminded of what it was like when we first made that decision. Be reminded that there's water between us and our old selves. Some of us have not been baptized yet, but have been thinking about it. And you saw those stories. You sat through some messages. And the question for you is it now time to put some distance between your old self and the person you want to be in Jesus Christ? And I want you to know that there are some practical steps that you can take to follow in this journey. I'm going to be at the back. There are elders in the prayer room. You can talk to any elder, any minister, another trusted mentor at this church, and tell them you've been thinking about this and you want to talk more. I'll stick around today as long as I need to talk. I'll baptize you today if you want to do that today. But another thing, next week, as we finish this series, I'm building in some time so that if there are several people who've been thinking about this and they want to be baptized, we will do that next Sunday in our service. If you've been thinking about it, don't put it off any longer. You can do it now. Between then, you can do it that Sunday. Whenever you have made that decision, don't wait. The new life is waiting for you on the other side. Please come and talk to us if that's a decision that you are ready to explore. It is time to let the waters of baptism, through the work of God Himself, bring you into new life. Let's stand and sing.